It's a Daily Talk Show episode 390.
What's happening, guys? We've got a guest in the studio.
Luke Kidgell.
Well, oh, I was about to say welcome. Hey, welcome me.
You know, I've done that so many times when it's people's birthdays, or the classic one is when you have an Uber and you go to the airport and they say, have a nice flight, and you say, you too.
Yeah.
Those fuckers aren't getting on a flight.
It's because I have my own podcast and I'm used to welcoming guests on. I'm rarely a guest. So yeah. I was just like, guys, welcome. Oh, it's not my show.
It's a power move.
It's a different muscle though that you have to flex.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're usually...
Like literally, that was a sick flex. I pretty much came in and started hosting your podcast.
You do a podcast a lot of the time by yourself.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
So that's hard, dude.
I agree.
I mean, comedy is a lonely business.
Yeah, I mean, what is that? The first one, obviously, you got to get through. You've done 100.
Yeah, I think I was like 120, 30 or something like that.
So you're still sticking at it.
Yeah, I got to go do one after this, actually.
And what's the vibe by yourself? What do you prefer?
Oh, I like talking to people more. Mm-hmm. But I think it is, like, there's no other situation in which you can just speak your mind for an hour and people listen. There's something like fun about no one interrupting, and which means if you have a shit opinion, people will just hate it for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Do people actually write in? Do you find people will write in if you've said something that they don't agree with?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I did a bit about the weirdest stuff as well. I did a bit about, like, I was talking, I don't know why, I just thought it'd be funny and make fun of people who drive manuals. Now, which is not a demographic you want to make fun of, because people who do drive manuals like cars.
Yeah. I was always impressed with the chicks in my life when I was young who drove manual. I was like, fucking props to you. Yeah. But I was, for some reason, I was into it. I was into girls who knew how to, I mean, it sounds fucked up.
Yeah, I get it.
You had to work a shaft. That's what you were going to say. And then you were like, no.
But it's not even where it was in my mind. It had nothing to do with the, just
like there's something about like the independence of I can control this whole thing.
Yeah, see, I was trashing manual drivers. I was saying, like, what's the point when cars can do it for you now? You can't even wank in traffic. I think that was my main point.
Well, I didn't
have many good arguments.
Here's the reality. If you want to get a Ferrari and you're rich as fuck, you're not getting a manual one. They don't do manual ones.
Really?
Look it
up.
Is there a manual Ferrari? No, they're all automatic. They're all either Tiptronic, which is just like, you do control the gears.
First time we've said Tiptronic on the show.
You don't have a clutch, a lot of these cars. So you're spending $500,000 and you're getting an automatic.
Yeah.
Automatics are actually more expensive or cheaper than manual?
One of them is they're more expensive.
More expensive automatic. But I now believe most cars are automatics. Mm. Like heaps of the family cars. I mean, I'm all about automatics now.
Oh, yeah. Well, everyone is. That's what I'm saying. My point was, it's the future. Why are we still living in the past? Mm. And people got mad. I put up a clip and it got like 80,000 views online, not because it was popular, but because like people were just in the comments, like, you know, but the kind of guys who are honestly caring about that are like, you know,
high vis wearing.
Yeah, they're the kind of dudes who they think they were calling me like, oh, what a girl. And I was like, the fact that you think calling me a girl is an insult shows a lot about you. Like, that's not, I'm not insulted by that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're a girl. It's like, all right, no, girls are great.
I like it because
you've
spun on the head what it used to be. You know, like people love manuals.
Mm. And there still is a minority there, clearly. Because I just thought it was funny. And also, like, I don't care. That's the thing. I think people thought I was like, fuck manuals. But I was like, no, I don't care. I just thought it would be funny just to say one line of, you can't even wank in traffic. I think that was my whole point.
Yeah, you just wanted to get to the wank joke and they got stuck on the on the manual.
Dude, it was like a three-minute build to a 4 out of 10 wank joke. I know. No one else could see that.
I know a tradie who told me that he used to have a wank on the way to work in the car.
Okay, I was really? Joking.
No fucking joke, dude. I thought it was weird. I hope you guys do too.
What? Did just take the sort of, was he a nicer person on the work site because of it? Less angry?
Oh, he's either got a sex addiction.
Yeah.
And this is a way of just sort of, I don't know, numbing it down a little bit for the day.
I mean, if it works, just do it before you leave. I think that's the key, maybe.
I'm not going to say who it is or whatever, but I know someone who's wanked on the job.
Really?
Wanked on the job.
I feel like episode 14, did we talk about that?
Yeah, we talked about work wanks.
We did this, episode 14 before we thought that this was going to be a thing that would sort of, we didn't think we'd have Seth Godin and just, Anyway, we spoke about sort of radical honesty. And so we just went through moments of talking about things that we are uncomfortable with personally, but things that we've done. And I think that maybe, I think that a work wank definitely made it in there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's, I mean, a squeegee in my ass also made it in there as well, which you'll have to listen to the episode.
If Josh didn't do that as a 14-year-old kid, how old were you, 12? 14?
In. So,
well, 19. This is the thing.
In.
As in I put ass. It in my ass, yeah. Yes.
Okay. The, I don't know. I was hoping you said on, and then I was like, maybe you said in. Maybe you said in.
No, okay. But the thing is, it was actually...
Because that's it was older.
It was like 15. I was like 15.
Luke, it wasn't for cleaning purposes, bro.
Yeah.
But it was because you said in.
The reason why I did it, to be clear, was because I had a sex ed teacher who was trying to give us a more sort of real experience around what you need to know about your body. And she was an older lady, and she talked about the male's G spot in our asses.
Yeah.
And so that's why I reckon I wouldn't have been the only one.
Lead a dog to water. Yeah, exactly. Drink.
See, I know that as a fact.
Yeah.
And I've never tried that it. Curious.
I haven't had to do it since. Well, because I realized I didn't want to be.
No, I kind of envy you because everyone does want to know what it feels like. Anyway, on you.
But the funny thing is that I mentioned on the show, and then I had a mate who was very sort of casual. He said, yes, I got my wife to put a dildo in my ass on the weekend to test it. It was the first time he was testing it out. And that's not even a joke. But we do
what
have
a brave woman.
We do have a squeegee key ring key roll.
Halt.
Ski.
Ski?
What do we have?
KG. Squeegee keyring cult.
Yeah, the reason that...
Why did you call it the most difficult sentence
well,
to say?
It hasn't been difficult up until today.
Oh, I've got some new Peter Pardo picks and pickled peppers merch on.
No, but these are
we're also selling seashells that she sells by the
shirts. So this keyring... for people who listen to the show regularly would know, this is actually designed by 3D Dill, which is how he got his name. And so he actually has come from Canada, and he brought, like, we basically started this cult. There's only four of them, and I've got, or six of them. How many do we have?
There's nine in total.
Really?
Yeah. Three went missing in...
they're in my ass right now.
In Josh's ass.
Yeah. And so, but that's how 3D Dill came to be. So he was listening to the show. He said, I've got a 3D printer. I'll make these for you.
Yeah.
And then before you know it.
I guess you're in the business, Luke, of sort of noticing things that are picking up momentum and running with them.
Yes.
It's what I love about creativity radio. It's like you start to see what audience is picking up on, like you sipping water on stage.
Oh, did you see that? How weird is that? That happens at all my shows and I don't know why. I still don't know why.
So when he explain what happened.
So, you know, have you guys seen comedy, obviously before? Yeah. The comedian, you know, about 10 minutes in, you know, your throat gets a little parched. So you walk over to the stool, have a drink, and there's always this weird pause where there's like 150 people or whatever, or sometimes if you're that big, a theater of people just staring at you drinking. And in no other profession does that happen, where everyone's just watching you drink. So at my shows, like, it always starts at the first time someone just, to feel the awkwardness, one time just went... and started
single
clapping
clap.
And I was like, thank you, whatever. And then the next time I went and got a drink about 10 minutes later in the show, about 30 people started to clap. And then by the end, I was almost getting a standing ovation, like to the point where I'd be like, and everyone go nuts, and then I'd take it away and everyone would be silent. And then it was like,
Do you find that adds to the show, or at the beginning was it rattling? From an energy point of view?
Oh, it's funny. It's a good thing to call back throughout the show, but sometimes I'll be halfway through a joke, forget about it, and I'm so into telling the joke, and I just quickly get a drink and everyone starts going nuts and I'm like, what? Example of it, I have a clip of it. I was like, oh, so I went to Thailand recently and I just got a drink and then everyone started going nuts and I was like, why so many people care about Thailand? And then I briefly forget all the time, like, oh, it's shit. Yeah, okay, we're all doing memes. Okay, cool.
It actually reminds me of when I watch Ricky Gervais's special, I feel like he's got big Fosters. He's got large.
Well, that happens in my new special that we've shot and it's coming out. And I don't know how each audience is. So it happened in like Adelaide, happened in Canberra, happened in Brisbane. I don't know how these people are communicating this garbage to each other.
It's so fun.
What is the main way of your tribe or your people, your fans?
Your cult.
Your cult.
Cult, yeah, I do have a cult.
What is the way that they communicate? Have you worked out how you can get them all
just
sort of...
like Instagram, and I do reply to like everyone's DMs usually. Yeah. And
do they talk amongst each other?
Yes, I have a Discord as well for like the Patreon people. Like, it's so weird. Like, some of them have become friends.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They've met through my coming to my shows. Like, then the next year... you meet two people you met the year before and like, oh, we're dating now. And you're like, that's so weird. It's
that's
happened.
Funny.
Yeah, it's super weird.
You mentioned
bonding over weird podcasts.
Like, well, it's a weird time. I mean, what I was thinking about us doing 7 days, if you listen to every show, there's a massive buy-in that I think is like if you listen to one show a week, you have buy-in, but it becomes the voice in your ear.
I wonder how many people are listening to one. I feel like it'd be hard. Did someone just fucking yawn? Did I hear a yawn?
Yeah, sorry.
You missed 97? Yeah. Do that again, mate. You're done.
He literally. This is what happened. We changed the audio levels. We've given him more mic volume, and I fucking regret it. Anyway, what I wanted to bring up was you mentioned VCal.
Yeah.
Was it your stand-up special that you're slicing up? Or is
that was just a clip from a couple of years ago. That was me opening for my friend Lewis. As you had Lewis Spears on the show before. Mm. That was when I opened for his special.
Yeah.
And I did that VCal bit and since it's gone very viral.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that. Oh, no, I think it was a good bit, but it would have been a bit I never put in a special, but I'm glad I did put it out.
Viral in a good way or viral in
this one was viral in a good way. But like, I got like 3 million views just from... VCal kids who love it. And now I've heard so many stories of VCal teachers playing it in class, which kind of proves my point that VCal is a waste of time.
I dropped out of VCal, which is the ultimate.
Wow. Yeah. See, I dropped out of TAFE, so everyone thought I was punching down. I'm like, dude, I'm just punching directly across.
To the gronk next to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a VCal thing to do.
But if you don't know what VCal is, it stands for Victorian Certificate of Applied Learning, doesn't it?
Really? I don't think the VCal kids would know.
Yeah. It's like
TAFE
in high school. It's kind of like if you don't want to do year 12, then you don't want to do VCE, you do like... they just do stupid shit.
Well, the problem that I had with VCal, because I was probably a perfect student for something like VCal.
Yeah.
But because I wasn't like seen as someone who would do a trade, it didn't really fit. But I feel like if they were to change VCal to be more like open, so it's like you could be a creative or a filmmaker.
Well, they
and do
are trying
stuff.
Because that's why I went there. So the whole story is I tell the story where I went to a school to teach VCal kids how to do stand-up. They employed me. They were like, hey, this VCal teacher messaged me going, hey, like we're doing this stand-up comedy thing. We'd love to get a comedian to come in and help the kids write like a 5-minute thing. And I thought it was super weird.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, cool. They're going to pay me.
It's like going to a jail or something.
I'm not
busy.
I don't do a lot during the day. So I was like, sweet. And I thought, oh, I might get a story out of it. And I'm very glad I went. And then the kids just were not interested because the kids who were there were there to do a trade or whatever. So they're like, why are we learning stand-up? And I'd be the same.
Yeah.
If I had no interest to do stand-up comedy, I'd be like, why am I sitting here listening to this guy?
I love that the teacher thought it was a great idea.
I think it's cool. I reckon it's so cool, though.
It's literally glorified babysitting. Like, that's what I was doing. It was like, just tell them to sit there and keep an eye on them for 2 hours.
So how do you actually set up a class for
I felt
stand-up.
Like I was like I was like the Jack Black in School of Rock. Uh-huh. I kind of came in, I closed the door, and I was like, all right, I'm going to be real with you. Who here wants to learn stand-up? And they were like, two people, kids. I was like, cool, I'll be happy to teach you. You guys, if you just shut up for 2 hours, I don't care what you do. I'm like, just don't be annoying. I was pretty much like that guy.
And were they reciprocal to that? Like,
yeah, the kids were just like, sweet, I've got a free period off. And then by the end, like, I did the anti thing of like, by the end I was being funny and they were teaching these kids how to write jokes or whatever. And the kids who thought they were too cool for it at the start kind of started to join in.
Because you fucking nagged them.
Yeah, I did.
It's the game. You fucking nailed it.
You know, one of them was sitting there at the back with his arms folded. And then by then he's like, oh, I've got a story. And then he started telling me, he's like, oh, you know what could be funny? And then I realized 5 minutes and I was like, you're writing stand-up. He's like, no, I'm not. I was like, yeah, you are. He's like, no, I'm not.
It's usually the kids that don't want to be involved that have something in them. Or
are they
you've
not
got something in your teeth, by the way, which I don't think the camera will pick up.
Is it? Do I?
I feel like you do.
Awkward. Maybe it might
it's
just
a gag. It's, no, it's just my fucking head.
Like a poppy seed. If you had a yeah, there it is. It's gone. It's moved.
Jesus.
Anyway, sorry about that. I keep looking at the. Yeah.
Good? We good?
Yeah. It's moved.
All right, I'm going to do this for the rest of the episode. That's right.
You actually wouldn't be able to see it. You had a radio show.
Yes.
With Lewis Spears, who we've had on the show.
Yes.
How did that come about? What, as someone who, I see you as someone who's been able to foster a community online, something that a lot of radio people dream of doing.
Yeah.
And so you sort of...
They? I don't know if they do.
I reckon there's a lot of, I think...
Well, it's like YouTube stars want to be TV stars, radio stars want to be YouTubers.
I think maybe at the start, because TV was still the big media.
Yeah, TV maybe not, but...
I think YouTube stars just want to be YouTube stars now, because it's... TMZ report on YouTubers much as they report on TV stars. There's David Dobrik and Logan Paul being ambushed in the street.
But David Dobrik talks about his dream is to have his own Tonight Show, talk show. And so
I reckon the future of that is on the internet.
But that's what I mean.
He'll have that, but it's just on the internet.
I think that everyone's undervaluing their own area in that sort of thing.
Hasn't he got 18, 13 million, whatever how many subscribers he has, isn't that probably more viewers than the Tonight Show has?
Yeah. 100%.
Well, that's the weirdness in humans. We value things that we think that we want, but we've got the actual thing right there. Yeah. Why did you decide to do radio at the start?
Well, that's what we've just realized recently was we've since stopped doing it, but I think we just wanted to do Luke and Lewis. We wanted to do a show together, and then I think the go-to at the start of, you're a comedian, you're like, all right, we want to do a show. What's a platform we can do that show on? And the obvious choice was radio, and we knew, and I think the reason why I found out about your podcast was we knew Jack Post.
Yeah.
I knew him from community radio, at Sin, and so I'd met him a couple of times, and then Lewis knew... Sam Kavanagh, who was Hamish and Andy's old producer, and through a family friend. And I think we just shot him an email and we recorded a little demo. And he was like, nah, come back when you want to change your online stuff. That's what Sam said. And he was pretty honest.
What did that mean?
Kind of just Lewis was doing some pretty edgy stuff and still is at the time. And he's maybe you guys aren't fit for radio. But then he was like, look, I'll still forward this on to all the content producers. Then Dave Cameron emailed us 3 days later going, come in.
That's great. So, there's a connection there because Tommy's call up that was through Dave when you got the Shepparton gig.
Yeah, he emailed me about 12:30 a.m. Just, mate, do you want a job regional?
How old were you?
I was 22.
That's some Scooter Braun shit, but it's way less weird because you're 22, up in the middle of the night watching little boys on the internet. But in your case, big boys, That's how Justin Bieber was found. You could have been the Justin Bieber of radio.
Yeah, but I'm shit.
And so, less talented. So Dave Cameron reached out, was that?
He reached out, then we came in, and then Jack was really good. Jack Post was really good and stayed after. So we used to come in for about 6 weeks in a row after Hamish and Andy finished, and Jack used to stay around and record a demo for us, just for free.
Amazing.
Which was very nice for him because they were like, oh, we need to record a demo, but they didn't want to pay anyone. If you've worked in radio, you'll know that they don't want to pay anyone to do anything.
And then
Jack said, yeah, I'm happy to do it, which
this
was
is probably
very
when
nice.
Jack was trying to build his house, which is probably would have been 2 years of delay. And so what was the... what were you trying to get out of those tapes? What were those?
We just wanted a show, and then we got put on the Modern Digital, the Triple M Digital Network, and then that was awesome. And then I think that's where our show was probably best. And then after about a year on that, not even 8 months on that, we got put on Fox on the Sunday nights, and we're doing the fill-in stuff on the school holidays and on the survey breaks, and then... I think we just realized that this isn't what maybe we really wanted to do at the start. I think we lost sight of what we originally wanted to do. On Triple M Modern Digital, we were doing whatever we wanted to do. And we were doing all this ridiculous stuff walking to work and 30 kilometers and doing all these dumb challenges.
The 30 kilometers bit is the outrageous bit.
You're not walking
walking every day. Well, the joke was that I was proving that I don't live in the country because Lewis thinks I live in the country. And he said, if you don't live in the country, he goes, you could walk to work. And I was like, fine. And I got up the next day and walked 6 hours.
We had a bloke by the name of Craig Harper on the show earlier in the week. And we were talking about what we're doing and how there's no rules. He's got a podcast too. Yeah. There's no rules to what we're doing. And that's what I'd love. Radio, there is a lot of rules.
So many.
There's stakeholders.
I don't mind those. It does keep the content moving and it's almost fun to sometimes play in that field. But then I think we're just better not playing that. Because I think our show was like an anti-radio show anyway.
Mm.
Like we used to break them. Like that was kind of the show. Like we used to do a segment called like, Is Our Boss Listening? Where we'd throw out a massive threat. Like we're going to do something awful on air. And we timed how long it was between our studio and Dave Cameron's office, and we used to play a timer, and because he used to insist that he listened every day, but we knew he didn't. So we used to like start the clock, and we're like, Dave, if you don't do this, we're gonna leave. One time we just left. We're 10 minutes into the show. We're like, we're not gonna do the show today, and then we just left. So like, I feel like the appeal of our show and why it built an audience so quick of our online fans was because it was a radio show like. On roids. Like it was a radio show. Like, why do these guys have a show?
But what do you learn about audience when you do a radio show? Because essentially a radio station has their own audience and you're then on their
Presenting to an existing audience.
I think that was always the battle between us and not like it wasn't, there was never any tension, but like the between us and the radio station was like,
there
like,
can be tension.
They're like, this is how you appeal to the Fox audience. And we're like, we didn't care because we already had our own online audience.
What was that out of curiosity? What would they say? What were the brand filters if you wanted to be the perfect boys?
For example, like they used to stop us from doing stuff that we thought was hilarious. Yeah. Like, we used to have this segment called Businesses Exposed, and Lewis always wanted to expose the radio station for not, you know, the Flying Fox, how it's not a helicopter, it's just a sound effect for the traffic report. And but they go like, live at the Flying Fox, and it's just someone in a news booth with a helicopter effect playing over it. We always wanted to just expose them on air for that, and they used to hate that shit. And we used to come up with stuff like, that's just one example of,
because it's making 20. Fun of them, right?
Yeah, we used to always make fun of the radio station. We used to maybe like when big guests used to come in, we used to like when Will.i.am came in, I remember he had a bunch of chocolates there waiting for him, and like we were there the night before he did the performance before the grand final or whatever last year when he was on the Fox, and we used to just always like steal their chocolates and like, we're eating Will.i.am's chocolates. It's just like, it was a constant thing of like, can you guys just rein it in a little?
Yeah,
it was just like every day we were like, oh, we could do this, and we'd be running through the office like, just crazy
and
stuff.
So it's been what, 6 months since you finished radio stuff about that?
Yeah,
like
we probably wrapped up about March, like just before the Comedy Festival, I think.
And so today you're announcing that you guys are back, you've got your podcast back.
Yeah, it's all seems like I've come on this podcast to announce that. It was actually a coincidence.
I've got Will.i.am, he's coming on tomorrow to announce something.
And he's eating all your chocolate.
Yeah.
So what was it, I mean, what was the thought process? Because you could say that all those nights that you spent doing the air checks or whatever with Jack Post was leading, it was essentially a podcast.
Yeah, well, we don't regret doing anything. Like the show was so much fun and it built what we had today. And so many people loved our radio show because I think maybe we didn't, well, I think we always stayed true to what we thought it was. Like we never did a, like you guys have worked in radio, you know, like this, like, oh, you guys should talk about this because it's in the news. And you're like, well, we don't want to talk about that.
Mm. It's great. It's also we great that the night shift, like I think that, the areas that you're playing in, was that you? If you were in a breakfast show in Shepparton or whatever, all of a sudden you have to talk about
the
earthquake.
They offered us a lot of regional stuff and we were like, so an example was, it was in the news at the time, I remember an air check, it was the Cardinal Pell case was happening and I was like, just as an example, would we have to talk about that seriously on air? And they were like, yeah, of course. And I was like, well, that's not what we wanted to do. We just wanted to do Luke and Lewis. So the reason why we kind of stopped it was because there was not a lot of, you know, by the end we were doing it in different states all the time because one of us would be doing shows interstate, and then we also really wasn't maybe the path we wanted to go down to, and also like we were only on once a week, we wanted to do it more.
I think that's a great decision. I think that a lot of people don't listen to that internal voice, but being
everyone
able to say
we're crazy, like all the other comedians on the circuit think we're nuts for quitting a radio show, because that's all think what a lot of people are striving towards.
Well, that's what I guess that's what we're talking about at the front. It's that there's a lot of people who idolize certain things within the industry, where it's like there's a bunch of people who like look at like who are in radio. Like I've heard people who were really successful in radio being chuffed that they're on a podcast. And it's like it's that seems
a
bit weird.
I've been lucky enough to experience both sides on it, and I've, you know, weighed them up, and I just think the online stuff, there's more creativity. It's probably more work, but at the end of the day, there's more positives because you got more freedom if you're lucky enough to have an online following, I think just go for that. And there's more, because again, like, there was other people at the ready session controlling our future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just not into that.
I mean, so what, describe the podcast.
Yeah, so now we're just coming back and pretty much doing like what you guys do, just like whatever we want. We're coming every day, like, you know, if I want to trash Lewis or something for 10 minutes, you can't do that on radio because you got to go to a song.
Yeah, so, well, it's one long talk break, right? This is, we have multiple chances. Are you still living in the country?
I do still live in Diamond City, yes.
Diamond City sounds...
I mean, it's called Diamond Creek, but
I was going to say, because Diamond City, it sounds like...
I call it Diamond City, because
it sounds like there's a casino. The Diamond City, actually, it's amazing how the name, a slight tweak of a name...
a strip club, bro.
No, Diamond City, it sounds Diamond City sounds like a casino in Vegas or whatever.
Strip club. Sometimes it takes Josh... you know, the moon has to be in the right position. Coffee cup has to be in the right place for him to do anything to get down to business.
Yeah, I'm very specific. If it's too cold, too hot, don't like, baby doesn't like to work.
But I think creative endeavors require, I don't know, you need to sort of be in a right place, some circumstances to get started. For you writing comedy, are you needing to, like, what works for you?
Yeah, I've tried a bunch of different stuff. I used to go down to my park and with a notebook and not take my phone. And then occasionally I'd be like, oh, what's another word for that? And I'd want to Google it, which kind did hinder you a little. So like I've now
got a dictionary. Like a
healthy, I'm not going to sit there at the park with a dictionary.
That would be pretty.
And a thesaurus. Like,
couldn't you buy dictionaries? I guess you'd have to. I mean, you'd get like an Oxford dictionary. Yeah. I've wondered about that, like getting a fucking.
Yeah.
I never appreciated scientific calculators when I was growing up.
Still don't.
I see. I still don't. I have no appreciation. How weird was it in high school when. Like primary school, it was like it was considered cheating to use a calculator. Then you get into high school and it's like, why don't you have a calculator in class? And you're like, well, I didn't bring it. And they're like, well, you need it.
Well,
it was always considered cheating in primary school.
Yeah, it was definitely, I guess the difference between primary school and high school is primary school is more sort of your times tables. Do you know what 6 times 6 is?
36.
That's very good.
Thank you.
It was a complete scam though. Think about how much money parents around Australia have spent around the world on calculators.
I don't know if it's a scam.
Scam.
Mine was like 150, like those big ones. They're so expensive.
That's what I mean. All those books.
Yeah.
Seriously. I mean, now it's a bit different.
Yeah. I mean, it's a classic dad move. You can tell that you're a dad because you just call everything a fucking scam. It wasn't a scam. It's an expensive, because I remember that was the most expensive thing in the whole, like your book list was a scientific calculator.
Oh, some of those textbooks are getting pretty expensive, especially
ridiculous.
I mean, I only did 1 year of like a course out of school, but I remember, I think it was like, one was like $200.
Were you doing music? What was the?
I was doing a Bachelor of Music Business at Box Hill TAFE, which is
business of music.
Yeah, it's music all I industry? Learned was there was no money in music, so I quit. But 13 grand later, I've now got a 13 grand hex debt that
that's fucked.
I've actually, since paid off. I just decided to just pay it off as quickly as I could.
So does it chase you?
You know, you get charged like a level of interest. It's called indexation on all your hex debt. I didn't know that. I think a lot of people do.
Have you got hex debt?
No, I don't.
It goes up every year.
Mr. 97 does. How much you got?
No, I don't have any.
Oh, you paid it off?
Because he's from.
My parents paid up for
him. Yeah. New Zealand.
Did you go to private school?
No, public. Born high school.
Yeah, which is basically.
For you. Basically, your parents paid off your parents.
I mean, he
was only there for 2 months at uni. Yeah. What was the actual bill, do you think?
I think it was 2.5.
Oh, that's all right.
Literally for 3 months, though. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
Two and a half.
It's cheap.
That's more than rent. Okay, no, it's not.
How much
live at home. It was like, that's a year's worth of rent. It's like.
Dill's in his fourth year, third year?
Going into my fourth year.
It's not a competition, but how much student debt do you have?
Probably 32 grand at the moment.
What's the deal in Canada?
We used to have a 6-month grace period where we could save up money and then start paying it back. But
6 months is not that much time.
But then the government decided to cut that. And then so as soon as I finish my degree, I have to start paying.
What sort of payments do you reckon a month you will be up for?
Probably starting at like $450-$500.
A month?
A month.
Yeah.
Far out.
So it's not like a percentage of your income like here.
No.
Here's what, like 2.5% or 5% of your income?
It's after you earn a certain amount of cash.
After you earn $50,000 a year, I think it is.
Yeah, so you could just scoot through on 40.
Which means 48. I'll never have to pay it off. I don't know why I did.
I mean, as a... as a comedian, like what do your books actually look like? How does this run us through
your profit and loss? Yeah,
I'm hoping you'll be asking Will I Am this tomorrow.
How does it actually work?
I would say most of the money comes in through touring, mm-hmm. so like pretty much 60%, and then maybe like a bit of online stuff. But online stuff, I'm only making like, I think people think we make a lot more mm. off of YouTube. Like I only make like $200 a month off of YouTube because all my stuff gets demonetized.
Yeah.
No, you think I'm joking?
No. I mean, I can 100% believe it.
It just gets demonetized. But then
they changed some restrictions around an account that can be monetized. Yeah. You have to put up a certain amount of videos or
but the whole thing is
views.
Yeah. Like at the start, you got to have 1,000 subscribers and also a certain amount of watch time.
Yeah,
but the thing is, yeah.
which just cuts out all those weird kids at school where they're like got 70 subscribers. I think it's just YouTube going like, we only want to deal with the top 80% of or the top 60% of YouTube users.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's lots of people with like Minecraft channels out there getting 30 views.
Mm.
What's the point of monetizing for either party?
Well, that's like,
they're not going to make any money out of it if they're only getting 30 views. You pretty much don't make any money out of it until you have about 10,000 to 20,000 subscribers anyway.
I mean, that was the thing when they announced that. It's like the amount of money that they're leaving on the table is like $10 a month is what the people would be making if they were actually. Not and even. So it's like. So,
I made $90 on my account over its life. And then I read the fine print. And until you go over 100. Over 100, they don't pay it out.
Yeah,
oh, that's so sad.
They have a threshold every month. So some months, like if I don't upload enough, I wouldn't even hit that threshold.
Yeah.
So I won't even get paid some months.
And so I feel like you invest quite heavily in those, like the special that you did and the content that you're creating.
So that cost me $10,000 to film my own special. But mm-hmm. I think everyone, that's the future, I think, is people's self-funding stuff. Like mm-hmm. instead of waiting around for Netflix to give you one.
Yeah.
And then we're going to try and get on some streaming services anyway, because streaming services are a lot more likely to give you the time of day, because if they don't have to do any work and you just like have a product for them, that's so much easier for them than making a Netflix original comedy special is more effort than just buying an existing one.
Yeah.
So I think if you have a finished product, and especially if you bank up a couple, you can give them all, and hopefully in a few years is the plan, to a streaming service.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, we've been talking to people at Stan and they're like, if we don't have to do anything, we'll take it.
Yeah. Well, their content, they need content.
Mm. They do, yeah.
And you've got, I guess there's companies like Netflix who are spending what was that number that you were saying the other day, Mr. 97?
I think it's around $20 billion.
Yeah, there's a lot of money going into content.
Did you hear those numbers of how many views that Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston film got in the first weekend?
Oh.
It was like something like 30 million just in the US.
Wow.
And Canada.
Because TJ watched it five times.
But that's like a quarter of their population.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Or is not.
They got hundreds of millions.
Oh, okay, that's like a tenth of their population. Yeah, that's more than our population.
It's about a year's worth of rent.
It's more than our population in Australia, right?
Yeah, we've got 25.
25.
Yeah, so they don't teach that in VCAL.
Right, I had to use a calculator for that one.
No, but so how do you? Where's the scientific calculator? Yeah. How did you justify? So as video production people, we see the value in spending 10 grand because that's our business.
I made over half of it back off the show because there was 400 people there. So you make most of it back on the night selling tickets. Mm. But still, I paid it off throughout the rest of my tour. So every show I did between Brisbane and pretty much the end of my tour, I wasn't making any money. I was just paying off my special.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think that's super rewarding,
but then
right?
Next year, the idea is like people have seen the special more, you sell more tickets, more people come to your shows. So it's like, it's just an investment, you know, put in money to make money.
So is the idea that you do a special every 12 months?
No. I think like once every few years, every couple of 2 years, because it needs to be like a good hour. You don't want to put out just the hour that you do every year because, some bits are, they're good in the room, but like I think when you guys will know if you watch a special on Netflix, I feel like it's never as funny as being in the room.
I'm always disappointed every time I turn on a Netflix special.
Well, don't watch mine. You'll hate it.
Who are you disappointed with?
No, I just think like all the
big. I think all the big. New one was awesome.
Yeah, I think that like the difference between being in like an actual. Like going to a stand-up night
seeing
seeing it in person versus versus doing the Netflix thing. I just feel like the way that I always land on a comedy special on Netflix is it's like, maybe I feel the pressure, especially with Brie, my girlfriend, when putting on a comedy special, it feels like there's an extra layer of like, we'll say, okay, if we don't laugh in the first 10 minutes, we'll turn it off.
People give it 10 minutes, which is why you got to put all your best shit at the start.
Yeah.
I mean, but then you've got comedians like Chris D'Elia, who does a podcast by himself every week. It's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And I love his stand-up too.
Last year, and I saw him in Melbourne, and he was like amazing.
Yeah. I think he's so funny, but it's amazing that you can – I almost like his his podcast better.
Yeah.
Just because it's him just riffing for an hour.
But comedy is such a taste thing because I watch it and I don't laugh as much. Like there's heaps of stuff that
I'm not watching funny enough people.
I feel like I'm better in the room though because I do a lot of crowd work at my shows. Like I reckon at my Canberra show I did about 25, 30 minutes of crowd work and I only do about 40 minutes of material. Mm. So I think I am similar to Chris D'Elia where it's like a thing where it maybe you are funnier on the spot, you know, but that's never as funny to watch back online because it's like you weren't there.
There's an energy to the room, I guess, that you're sort of playing off, which when you're in, when you're sitting at home.
Watching on the couch. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm. And so how many days a week are you doing the podcast with?
So Lewis and I are going to be doing it 2 days a week, Tuesday, Thursday. Uh-huh. And then we both have an individual one as well. So still 3 podcasts a week.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah.
And so what's the, from a strategic point of view, how much thought do you put to distribution? For instance, the YouTube stuff I was watching on the weekend, how much effort there is now in that, you know, the funnel and the analytics thing where it's like watch time and you got to get all this shit right and people are updating their thumbnails after the fact and testing things.
Yeah.
And I was looking at your YouTube channel and you've very much got it all dialed in, very compelling thumbnails.
I don't know if I do.
Like, no, well, I think thumbnails wise, like if you look at ours, it's all fucking like us sitting at a desk, right?
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah, like, I feel like you do need to put a picture. So say if you talk about like whatever, Justin Bieber versus Tom Cruise fight, you need to put a picture of Justin Bieber and Tom Cruise in the thumbnail.
We spent a week covering that.
People are so thick though. They're like, I know those two people. I will click. Like that's what goes through people's head. Like, I know all of those words.
Yeah. And then how much do you think about it though? Like are you-
Of course. Yeah. It's, I think what would I click on? I'm like, and I do. I get sucked in by stuff. We all do. Like you see something pop up on your homepage. You're like, oh, that seems juicy.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, I've got 4 minutes. I could watch that. Everyone does that. So you just got to think about people's habits and what's going to get people in. But also don't try too hard because then it's like you put off the true fans. Yeah.
Well, I think that's where we're at the moment with it, which is
– What would you prefer to win the masses or have the
– Well, I think also no one gives a shit. You win the masses because no one really cares. Like if I'm a fan of you guys, I'm not going to be like, oh, Tommy and Josh did like this super clickbaity thumbnail. I'm not watching it out of principle.
Yeah.
No one's thinking that. Yeah. Everyone just goes, oh, I'll watch it anyway. I don't care.
Yeah.
So
it is interesting. I think that's like one of the stories that we're – constantly pushing back on that we tell ourselves is probably limiting beliefs around we don't do that or like it's
but I think which, like it's, that was a thing 5 years ago but since because everyone's doing it and now it's the only way to get views and clicks and stuff you just do it.
What do you feel that internal pushback on, like is there anything that you feel like is a bit gross that you have to do? Because I think people don't like to be self-promoting and shit. There's a sense that, you know, people have a filter, right?
And you walked away from radio based on X, Y, and Z, like say with the regional stuff that really doesn't fit. So
that
we've got to listen
with our stand-up. At the end of the day, we pretty much went into a couple of meetings and it was pretty – they were essentially saying in a nice way, there's going to be a fork in the road where you have to pick between stand-up and radio. And obviously everyone on radio is like, and I'm pretty sure it's obvious which one you're going to pick. Yeah. And they're all going, it's radio. And we're just like, no, it's so not. Like, this is a side project in stand-up. We're comedians. Yeah. So.
And so what is that to TJ's point?
The self-promotion, what do you cringe at? What don't you like doing?
I mean, I don't – no one likes self-promoting. No one's like, oh, swipe up, check out the new podcast. But I also want
– Some people are convincing, mate.
But I also want people to watch it. So I'm happy to do it and I know it works. And I'm happy to plug my merch because it's an income stream for me. And I feel like the days of being shameless is almost over. Even with your audience, no one cares.
Yeah.
Mm. As long as you don't push stuff every single day. People, I am conscious of how much I push things, people to buy things, you know, and how much I push people to watch a certain thing because there's a time where it's too much.
Yeah. Well, I remember the getting a lot of Insta ads of the tambourine stuff.
And does that bother you? Because
no,
that's not me.
No, I think...
That's just like my management over. I've been doing paid ads.
Well, no, I think that it's... I think it's fine.
He bought two.
Exactly.
No, he's got two.
Yeah.
No, but I think that, no, it's an interesting, like...
See, I never see him.
Yeah. I guess a part of it is like the, when we think that we're getting tired of them as creators, it's only just getting cut through from people.
That's another thing.
Which like, I think is part of it too.
Literally the reason I realize is I do 20 nights, whatever, at the Comedy Festival mm-hmm. and can guarantee a week after I finish, you'll always get 5 messages going, so, oh, you never do shows in Melbourne. Why don't you do shows in Melbourne? Yeah, I just did Melbourne for a month.
Yeah.
What about saying the same thing? I mean, a comedy special, an hour, you're not coming with a new hour every day. How do you...
I do an hour, a new hour every day.
Every day. I was everyone else Could but you Luke.
I wonder if there's any comedians that say, I don't do a joke twice.
That's ridiculous.
It's silly because you're crafty. You're seeing how it works.
That's why it's ridiculous why I brought it up, guys. You just... Do you don't have to put me down.
Do you
feel so bad now?
That was just like, no, that's not how comedy works. That's why
he
I
also doesn't
it.
Watch specials.
That's why no, I do fucking watch.
Like, what would you know? You hate every comedy special.
I don't like laughing.
Saying the same thing. Do you feel, you know, because some people might come a couple of times. I mean, you got to get that out of your head. It's a person
people
who's not a comedian,
don't
right?
care. I had people come to my show 3 times this year and they love it. They almost laugh harder because they want to bring their friends the second time. Like, oh, and they know the bit.
Yeah, this is the bit you're going to laugh.
As long as they don't yell at the punchlines, I don't give a shit. And as long as they know. Nah, not really.
Yeah.
I've had people predict punchlines before and that's when you know it's a bad punchline everyone's thinking it. You're like, all right, I need to change that. I've been leading up to a joke and someone's just yelled at the punchline. I've just been like, yep.
There it is.
Oh, that's
fuck
annoying.
You.
Yeah. the relationship with hecklers.
I don't mind it.
Yeah.
I just love, like, I don't mind people contributing because, I like doing crowd work.
Have you ever done improv?
No.
Which is what you do basically on your podcast.
I've never studied it.
Yeah. Mm. I find that interesting. I've gone to a couple of those, like, fucking literally, like, it's pushed as improv and they sort of
I did one class once but like I was at like a university thing for another thing and there was like an hour of the day was an improv class and I ended up writing a bit about it. That's the thing, whenever I do something weird like that I usually just do it for a bit or
ABC always be contenting. Is that how you approach most situations in life?
I mean, it's you don't want to live your life like that, but it's always in the back of your head, I think, of like not when you're in the situation, maybe afterwards. You're like, was there anything in that?
Yeah.
I don't think if you go there going like, whoa, the content, and you're looking for it.
But have you, like I had Brie, my girlfriend, tell me a story 2 days ago or like I was, like it was all happening in front of me and I was like thinking to myself, this is going to be fucking great for the podcast. And Brie literally said, she said, by the way, you can't mention any of this on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, do you have cases like that?
Of course. Like my friends think they're like a lot of friends go, oh bro, don't talk about this. I'm like, yeah, you're not that interesting. I wasn't going to. But like you do get people like, oh, people who I think, you know, they say something, especially old people. Old people always make the joke of like they do something funny or whatever, like they spilt my coffee, like, don't use this in your act. And you're like, I wasn't gonna.
My mum's onto it now. She's don't put this on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which we've done a couple of times. Did she ever, she didn't blow up about, what did we mention?
I secretly recorded her saying, looking at a photo of Josh when he was really fat. Mm. Oh, he was very fat, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was a good little bit.
And I said
if we could
Josh.
Actually put it up online, it'd be even better.
But then she said after, oh, he's looking great or something now. You know, looking great now.
So she
that's
had
rough.
Come, yeah. what's the, from a community point of view, the comedy community, the podcasting community, how do you, I feel like you're in a unique position of being able to see it. We don't do comedy. Mm. We like the idea. I like the idea of like being out on the road. Mainly I like the idea of, I heard Maccas. One story, of just being in a car just having some snacks and going to like the next gig.
I mean, I did do that. I usually fly everywhere because Australia's so big, but I did the last couple of shows, my tour, I did Albury and Canberra in the one weekend.
Yeah.
And it's not fun. Like it's
the drive.
I like sitting. Drive. I like
there was one
sitting.
Day where I drove from Canberra to Melbourne, like 7 hours. And I was like, this sucks.
Were you on your own?
No, I was with my girlfriend.
Okay. Yeah. It still sucked.
No, it was, she was great. But it's just like, it's more just like, you know, we're taking turns and driving.
Yeah, sure.
We got like 4 hours in and I've never listened to a true crime podcast, but we started going through. I'm like, let's just whack one on. We'll just see what all the fuss is about.
What's this serial
thing?
Three
episodes down, I'm like into like Man on the Window. I'm like, I'll play the next one. I'm like so into it. And I was like, you know, it's just kind of boring, I guess.
Anything over 2 hours of a drive just starts to get boring.
I love it. But so the community bit, do you find that are you how many clubs can you do a night? Is that even a thing in Australia?
I think the most I've ever done a night is like three or four, three in Melbourne. I'd love to go to New York and do like seven in a night. That'd be cool. Mm.
How long are the bits that you do?
Yeah, usually like 10 minute spots, five, 10 minute spots in Melbourne. And yeah, and then like, you know, but I go up and do gigs in interstate sometimes. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was in Gold Coast, you know. So you get like some more headline spots if you go interstate and stuff, so you can do longer. That's why I go, just to work on material.
Yeah. And so who do you hang out with? Like what's the actual experience outside of those 5 or 10 minute spots?
I mean, I usually just go there, in Melbourne, I just go do my time and like talk to a few comedians and then head off.
It's just it's a lot of thinking, right? Like it's your head, it's your brain needing to be firing properly to make it all work, right?
I think it becomes habit. When you're doing new stuff, definitely, you're like, oh, what did I think of again? Like you write it down earlier and you're like, oh, how did it go? And the word, because if you muck up one word in a joke, it can sometimes ruin the entire joke.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to be on it for sure. But then most of the time, once you've done a bit that many times, like I could just, you know, if you were like, all right, welcome to stage, Luke Kidjo right now, I could probably just do 20 minutes without thinking
all right,
about
Luke Kidjo, let's go.
Who's someone within the Australian industry that has either helped you or have just been super, super nice backstage? I feel like comedy gets a bit of a bad rap in regards to, it's a bit fucking bitchy.
There's a lot of that, but there's also so much of the opposite. Yeah,
who are some of those epic people?
I mean, so when I really started, obviously Lewis was one of the first people I met, and he had been doing it for a bit longer than me, and I was very new. He was really good to me, which is why we became good friends, I think. But people who like people would know who are great, like Nick Cody has always been awesome to me. He was the reason why I started stand-up.
Yeah.
I went to see his show in 2015. That was the first ever stand-up show I'd ever seen. And then 3 months later, I was at an open mic night giving it a go. Husey's always been really good to me. He's a really cool dude. I don't know, like there's a lot of people. I don't know, I can mention a lot of names, but yeah,
because I remember
Husey, like we know
Doug
Husey.
Chappell at the Comics Lounge, he's always been awesome to me. There's just so many people. I feel like if I just keep saying that, I'm gonna miss someone.
Well, I did a behind the scenes of a comedian a few years back, and I did this bit, I remember, in the Comics Lounge or behind the scenes filming before the person came on, and there was a comedian who was sort of like interacting or whatever within the video, and that they were like interacting with the person that I was filming, who's the video was for. So this person talks in it and all that sort of thing. Anyway, edit the video, put it up, and then I get like we get messages being like, hey, you don't have permission to have that online. And so we had to take down the video and all that sort of thing.
I think another person who the video was for.
Yeah. And so I feel like those...
I've seen the video.
Yeah. And I think that like it's such a common occurrence, I feel like, that there is that sort of... I feel like within playing in that scene, you have to be talking a certain way, or you got to be very careful of like, oh, this person's sensitive about this and these people don't like these people.
A lot of people are reluctant to, I think a lot of people just see what we, like particularly the online guys, put out online and like, oh, that's them. And then like I'm probably pretty the same, similar to what I put out online in real life. But I think a lot of people just really are reluctant to embrace the online thing even still, particularly in the stand-up circuit, because I think that's just like a, I think they think like we're cheating or like we're jumping a queue, Or like, but I don't think there is a queue. There's no queue anymore.
There's also the, I mean, authenticity is a word highly used these days that lost a bit of its meaning. But there is, if you're online, if you're doing what you're doing, just creating this much content, it's hard to be a phony. It's hard to not be the guy that's appearing. And some of these people, they've got this set, maybe these old school comedians. That you see them the way that you do.
Dude, it's a lot of the ones coming up as well. Like they want to be on the gala. Like I've no, I have no desire to be on the Comedy Festival gala ever. Because it's like, well, my stand-up clips get millions of views online. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like they're getting more plays from a more target demographic online. Mm. Why would I want to be on the ABC? Not the ABC. I'm more just what's the point? Obviously, a cool gig. You get to perform at the Palais for 3,000 people. But other than that,
Prestige, just that. It's they're not, hanging on to an old idea. What infuriated me the most was a radio article written by a radio website talking about. You know, radio is still the way most people consume their music.
But it's not, though. It's I looked at it, dude.
The fucking stat that they pulled from was a survey.
Maybe if you look at over 50s, like AM. If you include AM in that thing, it is.
A survey of 2,000 people, that's where they got that study from.
Yeah. I mean,
that's 2,000 people is representing Australia. There's 400 million.
Yeah, but also young people don't want to complete surveys, so it doesn't actually.
True, but like all you have to do is look at Spotify numbers in Australia. It's huge. It's millions and millions of subscribers. So there's your fucking answer that beats your radio thing.
But there's a lot of people who don't. Like, I feel like I'm going to cop a lot of shit I feel sure there's going to be a lot of people who mock me for releasing a comedy special myself. You know, this guy, whatever, doesn't deserve one. And it's like, well, I still go to gigs all the time. I gig like four nights a week at least, like minimum. So I'm always working at stand-up. So it's like if I'm in an opportunity where I can do that myself, then why – I think it's insane as to why wouldn't you? Yeah. And I'm sure I'll cop a little bit of lashback under the surface from other comedians. Like, oh, because, you know, promoting is a comedy special. They probably view it as a thing where it's like, you know, 10 years in, you do your Netflix comedy special.
I think they're right and you're also right. You're both right.
I agree I totally get why they think that, because the old way was like, you know, you get good enough, Comedy Central gives you a special or HBO gives you a special, but it's like the game's changed.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, if you think about it, if you're at a cafe and you're lining up somewhere because you think there's a line and then some fuckers just walk in, and then you discover that there is no line, but you've been lining up. You're going to be a little bit pissed off, right?
I've done that before.
That's perfect.
Well, literally, like, don't get me started. I've actually blacklisted. I've blacklisted Hash in the city. Fuck you, Hash. I had a line. I was the first in the line. This was Sunday morning, Saturday morning.
It was like a ticket system.
No, it wasn't a fucking ticket system. But he's like, oh yeah, just outside, like they can serve you outside. Like,
oh, no.
Set you seated outside. The thing was, there was no fucking line outside. And so we went out and there was like six fucking people.
I mean, I'm still getting ropeable if I've been lining up and there's only one checkout register and then they open another one. The cunt behind me fucking jumps to that.
No, you can't do that.
Bro, absolutely. I mean, in front of you. It should be the etiquette to shift me over there,
Yeah. I feel like I learned that at Coles, Endeavour Hills. Mum taught me young that, you know, the person who's at the front gets to go in.
So it should be.
I mean,
these are unwritten rules of the world.
But also the other unwritten rule, always put your heavy stuff at the front and the light stuff at the back.
To make their packing easier?
No. It's because you don't want to squash your eggs and stuff. You want like the... If you put some, the cans...
So you're doing it for your benefit, not for the checkout.
Oh, definitely. But it's a rule of light. Like it's did you know that or no?
Yeah, I guess I knew that, but usually I never go to a low, because I still live at home. Mm-hmm. The only time I ever buy stuff from the shops is I'm never getting more than a basket full of stuff.
Like 12 items or less. I mean, that's not really a thing anymore. Well,
I never get
a
trolley.
What do you buy?
I'm just like, you know, parents go away. Even when like my mum and dad go away on holidays or whatever, I will not go and do a weekly shop. I will go every day to the shops and buy like... just stuff I need for the next 48 hours.
Yeah. It becomes a ritual, right? I mean, we've done that, but then with a kid.
I know it's impractical.
With a kid, it's actually just entertaining. It's like you can run up the aisle. It's like.
Oh, you like going to the shop?
Well, my son loves it. He's a supermarket. He wants to go, but then he fucking just goes down the yogurt aisle and smashes yogurts. But
No one was like, how does your kid say supermarket? But thank you for telling us.
No problem. But fuck you.
So what's the So the podcast, the comedy stuff, what else?
The
is
gala there? Special that you're vying for.
What else is it? What else is in the works? What are you prioritizing at the moment?
Just getting Luke and Lewis off the ground. Mm-hmm. We want to see where we can take that, and then the tour next year, and just keep growing it all. Mm-hmm. I really want to prioritize podcasting over maybe YouTube videos and stuff. Yeah. I guess is the way I want to go down. I think I like doing the long form content more than sitting there writing a video about The Bachelor or whatever.
Yeah. Are you thinking money? Like, is that a part of that equation?
No, not at all. I just it's what I like it. Doing. Yeah. And I think that's the content that I like consuming is like podcasts and stuff. All my favorite comedians like Theo Von and Chris D'Elia, all those American guys, they're doing that. And that's what I like consuming. So it's like, well, I just want to make what I like, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good
formula.
It's
probably not a good money move, actually. No, but at the moment, the money move is probably to make shorter content, get people in and,
But I don't know if it's fulfilling, right? I think if you can win the other way, so if you're going to try two options, you're not assured of winning either way.
Yeah.
So if you're to do the thing you fucking love every day and have that win, who's laughing now?
Exactly.
Yeah. I feel like
that's what you guys are doing, I guess.
Yeah.
Like we're giving it a crack.
Well, we wouldn't do it 7 days a week if you didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think you're just sitting here getting sadder and sadder every day.
I think that's the key. And it's like, even we launched our new website, thedailytalkshow.com, earlier in the week. And it's like, there's so many things that are imperfect with it. Or even like we filmed an episode earlier in the week where the camera was slightly tilted or things like that. It's like, these things will happen. This is part of the part of the journey. And it's like a lot of people are trying to seek that perfection.
But that's a cool episode. Yeah. I call it the 45 degree episode. Lewis and I were actually had an idea where to do an episode in like 140 p, like, so make it like pixelated and just do like the 140p episode and just try that's and so get good. It shitter quality as possible.
Yeah. Put your glasses on. That's the name of the episode.
Legit. Like, we're just like, we always think of like weird ways we can get people's attention and it wouldn't be good to watch every time, but for 30 minutes or an hour, watch us and 140p it'd load quick, it'd be great. That's the only benefit, actually.
Yeah, it's solid.
No buffering.
What's the what's your relationship with like perfectionism?
I need to get over that. Mm-hmm. I focus too much on trying to be perfect. And sometimes it takes me 2 days to edit a 10-minute video, because I go through it, and when it's done, I should put it out. Then I go, it could be funnier if I change that by 3 frames. Mm-hmm. Idiot. No one cares.
Well, I think that's part of the us doing the show daily. Yeah. That's a thing that we just have to get used to. Is it's like,
it's more about output than I would say content is better than no content. Sometimes I'll like not put out a video because I don't think it's done yet.
Yeah.
But it's like, no one cares. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, people, and even though when I consume content, you just like go, boom, that was funny. All right, next. No one thinks about it as much as you do.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's interesting. I think the other interesting thing is the as we build audiences, people care about different stuff as well. So something we'll say will resonate. It's like the annoying people with the manual cut.
I mean, some people would have been really hated listening to that earlier. And then I'm sure there's a VCL person going like, oh, that's bullshit. But they probably laughed at the manual thing. Yeah, they're like, you can't wank in traffic, but fuck you for talking about VCL. Yeah. And that's what I find all the time is you talk about 4 different things in an episode and I have no idea what's going to be the one that really resonates.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I think this one's funny, but other people might think that is.
So. Yeah. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, you learn quick that what you feel about something isn't how everyone else does.
For sure. And I think that's good. And that's why I always throw it out there. Like, I was getting death threats for about a week, like legitimately death threats from these car guys. Cause I'm like, how dare you and stuff, which I thought it's insane.
Yeah.
Cause what I said was, if you watch the video, it's like not that bad. I was just going like, it's the future. You're all living in the past. It's clearly a joke. And I'm getting death threats all week. And I just think like, that's, people are weird, but also not everyone's going to agree with you, even when you're joking or talking about something so mundane. So, just don't let it faze you.
Yeah.
Like, just don't, like, if you say your opinion for sure, but if people don't agree, you can't get mad at other people for disagreeing.
I think it also changes when you're actually in the arena and doing stuff. Mm. All of a sudden, I think your perception of other people changes too. Like, I think we're way more sort of empathetic with what people are doing, where it's like,
yeah,
rather than getting mad, being like, oh, actually, I sort of understand.
I've never left an angry comment under anything.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah. I've never felt the need to be like, ah, oh, this sucks. If I don't like something, I won't even dislike a video. Yeah. I'll just quit out of it. Yeah. I'm like, ah, oh, not for me.
Yeah.
It takes a certain type to leave a scathing comment.
And to dislike a video dislike, on YouTube the dislike is one. Such a weird thing to do,
yeah.
I think.
Well, there is a... yeah, because I think about it, like the most dislikes we've had in a video might be 2 dislikes.
And you think about that at night.
No, well, I just think about I think the interesting thing is it's like,
oh, man.
But I was just like, oh.
Imagine if you got a death threat. Like,
oh, this is, well, lock this place down, yeah. Security guards.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're nearly there. But I think.
And after the VCAL thing, I got death threats from mums.
Really?
Yep.
Well, I get it. What they're thinking their son.
Kids, like, my kid, how dare you? Their daughter. He tries his best. And you're like, hey, he doesn't try hard enough.
But I think that, it's.
I think a lot of people thought I was making fun of people with learning disabilities, which I absolutely wasn't.
Yeah.
And my point was VCAL is a waste of time for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're dumb if you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess like it's also understanding like I look at the dislikes, I look at that stuff and I think like not for them. Like the stuff that we created isn't for them. Like we're not creating something for everyone. And so sometimes people will land on our video that's actually, it's not meant for them. And that's all they're identifying is it's like out of the whole algorithm, out of the internet, they landed on it. And I guess what ends up happening, and I've noticed this with friends with brands. I had one friend the other day say, we're getting bigger. But one thing I'm noticing is there's more trolls coming out and questioning us. And it's like,
well, the more, the wider audience you reach, like think about society, you're going to like, there's a lot of fuckheads.
Yeah.
But if you've only got 10 people who you talk to, you're like, oh, there mightn't be one fuckhead in the group.
Yeah.
But if you then branch out that to 1,000 people, there's going to be a lot of fuckheads.
Yeah,
it's like when you go to a show and at the start, I didn't used to get many hecklers in the first 2 years. Now that I'm doing bigger shows, you go do like a big room in Brisbane or whatever, there's going to be one person that sucks.
Yeah.
What is it, like, what kind of a person is a heckler? Who's like, that's a YouTube.
I think drunk.
Drunk, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Or drunken. They think they're contributing. No one really tries to, I've never got anyone going like, you suck. That doesn't exist.
It's the fighting gone wrong.
I think.
I wonder if it's premeditated. I'm going to a comedy show tonight.
No, I think it's 100% I think it's like they're projecting experience that they're having. And I guess like Jack Post talks about it where it's like on H&A, they could be play fighting and then on Instagram, he'll do a post and then someone will be trolling him about something, whether it's his house or whatever it is. And it just misses the mark.
Yeah.
And it's based on, they see the play fighting.
Yeah.
They're just a bit fucking socially awkward.
Yeah. People don't know how to, some people just aren't funny and that's fine.
Yeah.
But then they come in. I get that a lot. Like some people can try and get a lot of comments. And I know they're trying to be funny and they're trying to have a playful dig at you.
Yeah.
But like they just say something like so unfunny and so boring that you're like, oh, this just like reflects more on your personality than it does my video.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an interesting thing with the heckler thing. I think a lot of people think they're contributing, but I don't think anyone goes out of their way to ruin it usually. I think it's like a lot of people though, because it is a glorified thing of like comedian versus heckler. A lot of people who don't know a lot about comedy go like, I get a lot of, oh, bro, I'm going to heckle you. Like, I get messages going, man, when you come to Aubrey, just bought tickets, I'm going to heckle you, bro. Ha, ha, ha. And it's like,
yeah.
But they don't. But they do think it's like a cool thing they could do.
Yeah.
I think they do.
Death threats are just banter.
But a lot of people do like, oh, bro, I'm going to heckle you. And then they don't. Or they do. And then they go, oh. And they realize as soon as they've yelled something at the like, oh, this isn't for me.
Just back right down.
I think a lot of people fantasize the idea of being a funny heckler in their head. Yeah, then they yell something at, no one laughs, and they go, okay, you do the joke.
Well, the whole setup is usually the comedian comes out on top. That's the whole thing with hecklers, right?
And you're the one with the microphone.
Exactly.
And the stage.
Like, and the audience that probably like you.
Everyone's, especially if it's your show, everyone's paid to see you, not seeing the guy who you know, yeah. No one's paid $30 to see some dude yell out.
Luke Kidgell, thanks for coming on, mate.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, give us a review, but also type in Luke and Lewis on Apple Podcasts. Are you gonna? Is it a new feed that you're having to start?
Same feed.
Oh, yeah. That's convenient.
So you can go back and catch up on all the radio if you really want. A year and a half of us disrespecting a commercial radio station. If you want to go listen to that,
I think it'd be interesting. I'm curious to hear the contrast.
Who knows what it's going to be. I'm very excited about it. That's all I know. And awesome. We also use the same sign people as you. So we're going to have a really good sign.
Yeah, they're great people. It's a daily talk show. If you listen this far, do a screen grab, do an Insta story, tag us up, even tag Luke up so he knows that you've listened as well.
Tag me.
Otherwise, we'll see you tomorrow. It's Fat Fridays tomorrow. I have no idea what we've got planned.
It's going to be fat.
Something savory, maybe. I feel like savory.
It's not fat enough.
We did Ben and Jerry's last week, so
yeah.
We'll see. It's a daily talk show.
Just see what Will Am brings in.
Exactly. It's chocolate.
It's actually the chocolate. Yeah, probably chocolate.
It's favourites.
I know for a fact he has it in his riders.
See you tomorrow, guys.
See you guys.